So hello, welcome to the November 19th, 2020 edition of Guelph's favorite weekly breakfast meeting, where we take our politics with a side of home fries. And now on to our topic this week. So the COVID-19 pandemic has definitely pushed a lot of issues to the back of many people's minds, but the climate crisis should never be one of them. We started 2020 with much of Australia and the Amazon rainforest burning, causing global alarm and plenty of discussion on what needs to be done. And then the pandemic hit and the focus shifted largely to the more immediate emergency. Despite some initial hopes that people staying home under lockdown would result in a period of healing for the atmosphere and some early signs that air pollution was clearing up in large urban areas at least, unfortunately, the world's CO2 emissions have continued climbing, and so has the carbon concentration in the atmosphere. Activists, politicians, and civil society members everywhere have shown signs of struggle to keep people thinking about the climate. Our guest today is Evan Ferrari, the executive director of eMERGE, and he's going to tell us about some of the initiatives that his organization is involved with right now, and also what we can keep our eye out for in the coming days at City Hall. So, Evan, I'll get your slides up on the screen, and then you can take us away.
Great. Thank you. I just would like to recognize that I see that Ron East is in this meeting this morning as well, and Ron has been involved with the process that we've been going through to work on this issue that we're going to chat about in a couple of minutes. There may be others, but I just can't quite see everyone else that's associated with it. And we're going to use a new piece of technology here to see if we could advance the slides in a really interesting way. So thanks once again for the invite to James, to Phil, who isn't here this morning, and to Dustin. Really appreciate it. This crowd is always engaged. They always don't think twice about poking me in the eye with a sharp stick if they don't like something I'm saying, and I encourage you to do so, and please challenge us because we want to be ready for all possible questions. Here's the technology we're going to try. Watch this clicker work. Hey, look at that. And in the event that you don't know about us, eMERGE, Guelph Sustainability, our task or our goal is to fight climate change in many different ways. One of the prime ways that we've done it is by focusing on a positive outcome of getting Guelph to 100% renewable energy. But today what we want to talk about is we're going to look first at an overview of climate change, the different things that have happened in Guelph. And then we've got a couple of things that we're going to be promoting. And that's one of the things, as I mentioned, that Ron has also been involved with. But first, I just want to tell you a bit of an advertisement for two events that we have coming up. One is an event that we're holding next week called Climate, COVID, and Kids' Health in Marginalized Communities. We're doing that in conjunction with the Ontario Public Health Association, and the Executive Director, Peggy Walsh, will be joining us next Thursday. If you go to our website, you'll be able to get to the registration point with that. We're really looking forward to that piece. It's what's become really evident, I think, to a lot of us is that COVID is disproportionately affecting marginalized communities and specifically children. And at the same time, the impacts of climate change are doing the same right here in Ontario and right here in Guelph. The next event, this is a teaser. I'm not giving you any more information than what you see there. This is going to be a heck of a lot of fun. Mark your calendar for December 8th. We're going to be releasing more information about this, and damn it, it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun, but don't take my word for it. So let's get on with climate change in Guelph and understanding where we're going with this. But first, let's look at what we've done, where we're going. What are we doing? Where are we going? And what can we do? So let's start with what we've done, the action that Guelph has taken in recent years. And here's a timeline that we're looking at. And we've purposely gone back to 1997. There have been other events related to waste management, but we're purposely taking that one, and I'll show you why in a second. And starting in 1997, the City of Guelph, the Guelph City Council came up with three specific motions in favor of a coal phase-out, where they were asking or demanding that the government create a coal phase. We know where that one landed. The next major energy, or rather a climate change related item, was the city created a community energy plan. And then there were two specific goals. One was 100% renewable energy by 2050. That was for the corporation of the city of Guelph itself, not for the broader. So this is what the merger was successful at getting, was the corporation, so the entity that operates the city, both in all of the buildings and the fleet, et cetera. And then community-wide by 2050, also net zero carbon. And I've got to move my slides here for a second. There we go. And I just want to use that clicker again, but that was for the entire city as opposed to the 100% renewable was just for the corporation of the city. And then finally, the city acknowledged the climate crisis. That sort of brings us up to speed on the bigger, I mean, there's all sorts of little things that were in there as well, but let's delve a little deeper. So what are we doing? What does it look like today from a sustainability standpoint? And what we've done is we've taken data from the city sustainability report that was released in September. And what it did is that it looked at the difference between 2018 and 2019, and we actually saw an increase in GHG emissions, albeit it was small, but it was indeed an increase. It wasn't a decrease. So what does it mean? Well, that emissions are still increasing. Even though it's a small amount, we really didn't see anything of consequence over those 2 years. The second thing is that we've reduced facilities and fleet energy by 1.45%. Is that much? Well, it amounts to enough to power over 250 homes for a year. Let's put that into context. What does it mean? Well, if you're looking at that, a 1.45% decrease in city facilities is minuscule from a consumption standpoint. Yeah, it's 250 homes, but guess what? Clicker didn't work there. There we go. Guelph has more than 55,000 homes. So when you put that into context, you realize that it's really irrelevant at the end of the day. There we go. We increased the renewable energy supply by 3.7% for the city of Guelph. It's for the corporation of the city of Guelph. It's enough to power about 100 homes a year. But what we want to remind you with that one is that there are 55,000 homes. I say homes, residential units, because some of those constitute apartments as well. That's not just single family dwellings. And what does it mean from our perspective? That the renewable energy supply as a whole for the city, for the corporation of the city, is now at about 24% of the overall energy. And I'll show you this pie chart. The biggest thing for the city as a corporation and also as a community, but more so as a corporation, that large 75% that you're seeing there is all about transportation. So wrestling and shifting away from fossil fuels from a transportation standpoint is key on that piece. 60% waste diversion rate. We're really doing well, but what does it mean? Let's take a look at this. So that's from city facilities, or not only city facilities, but this one is actually citywide. It's probably amongst the best in the country. But unfortunately, this is a decrease. We were at 68% of a diversion rate, and now we're starting to do worse. And I'm not going to point fingers at the city. I think we need to all point fingers at ourselves on this one. It's not only a local issue. This one is a global issue of the proliferation of plastics. And there's been a perfect storm of things that I won't get into all the details here. We can have this this discussion offline, that has significantly impacted our ability to keep that waste diversion rate down. So this one is a really problem one, but it seems to be getting a little more attention locally and also on the national level. So let's give the city a report card when we're looking at these things. So the GHG emissions, an increase. The next one. So from our perspective, we consider that an F because it's going nowhere. Reduced facilities and fleet energy by 1.45%. Okay, we're giving it a C. Maybe we're being overly generous on that one. And what about the third one here? Increased renewable energy supply, 3.7%. Well, we did a little better there. There's a C plus. Let's keep moving. 60% waste diversion rate, but that was a reduction, so we've given ourselves a D. If we look at it as a whole, if we're in a market, we'd probably say that the city is somewhere around a C minus. So where are we going? Well, at this rate, we're going nowhere fast. It's really pretty damn simple. And what we'd like to talk about for the next few minutes is some really, initially, a really quick opportunity that presents itself for us and for the city of Guelph, and then what we need to be doing and we need to be planning on a longer term basis. So how can we move forward as a city and as a community on this one? Number one, we can demand a phase out of fossil fuel burning for electricity in Ontario. This is a really simple one. All that we're asking City Council to do is to say that you need to send a letter just like you did in 1997, three letters, in 1997, in 2000, and I believe the third one, three motions, the third one was in 2003, say, at that point it was phasing out coal. Now it's the next one. It's phasing it out. And that we want people to support the City Council motion. And there's a motion currently in the works. It's working its way through. It actually hasn't been posted yet, but thankfully there are a number of councillors working on this. And here's the draft as we understand it currently, that the city moves that the province establish an interim, getting down in the weeds on this one, but we'll simplify it in a second, that the province establish an interim cap of 2.5 megatons per year on gas plant pollution. That's the first one. Here's the clincher, that the province develop a plan to phase out all gas-fired electricity generation by 2030 so that Ontario can meet its climate targets. And some of you are going to say, well, this is crazy. Where are we going to get the electricity in order to do this? How are we going to actually accomplish this? How can we accomplish this? Well, I'm glad you asked. Here's how we need to do it. And this one is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, that we need to develop an energy efficiency programs that are quick to deploy and low cost. If some of you were here before the event started this morning, some of the conversation that was going on, Lisa McTaggart and her family, they're approaching cutting their energy use in their homes by half. And that's all through efficiency and conservation. We need to maximize efficiency efforts by paying up to the price per kilowatt hour for energy efficiency measures that we currently pay. We need to support renewable energy projects. So that's something that our current provincial government has not been supportive of. And these types of renewable energy projects that have costs below what we are paying for nuclear power today, believe it or not, we've actually gotten to that point where new commercial scale and utility scale renewable energy projects are at a lower cost per unit of production than, so that's when you consider all the costs associated with the capital costs and operating costs are lower than current nuclear power. And we need to work with communities to make the most of those economic opportunities, where we're encouraging communities and businesses and individuals and places of worship and not-for-profit groups to embrace renewable energy projects and the conservation piece. Here's an interesting one as well. People are saying, well, you know, we're just gonna have to find our power elsewhere, or we need to do some crazy thing. Well, guess what? Quebec has excess electricity from its water power system. And here's how we can do it there. They've offered power at least half the cost of rebuilding Darlington and Bruce nuclear plants. If you're a fiscal conservative, this should get your attention. Unfortunately, that's not happening in Ontario. The provincial government wants to race towards more nuclear out there at a huge cost. It's more than twice the cost of current costs. Ontario can only benefit by making the long-term, with our green energy-rich neighbor, And here's the really interesting one, that Indigenous communities can benefit from this agreement. The First Nations of James Bay are completely supportive of this arrangement, and frankly, they will benefit from it economically and socially within their communities. And finally, we need to use the COVID stimulus funding to fast track these approaches across Ontario. As Dustin pointed out, the climate crisis hasn't gone away, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. How can we meld the two of those together? And if all we're going to do is to build back in a similar manner that we've been operating up until this time, we're not going to get out of this hole anytime soon. COVID-19 can be used as an opportunity to push for change out there. So step two, well, guess what? We need to acknowledge the truth that, well, guess what? That 2050 goal for being 100% renewable energy and that 2050 goal for being a net zero carbon is damn well too late. So we need to acknowledge that. And then we need to do a heck of a lot more than acknowledge it, but acknowledging it is the first step towards it. And we need to establish intermediate targets, adopt targets towards the net zero carbon, and also adopt yearly targets towards 100% renewable energy. If we don't adopt those interim targets, then hey, if we're going to do this at 2050, each consecutive council can just push off these decisions till a later date, because 2050, damn it. Well, I intend on being around at that point, because I intend on continuing to be a pain in their side until we can actually see this stuff materialize. So we need those yearly targets in both cases in order to see some real movement forward. So what can you do about it? Well, here we go. The first one is to support the City Council motion. It's not in front of them yet. We asked them originally to go down this path in July, and this has been sort of winding its way through. There's a coalition of seven local groups that have been working on this, and now some of the city councilors are bringing this motion forward, and it will provide all of us the opportunity to actually get involved by supporting that motion. And that we demand council to acknowledge the truth. So the first thing is, yes, let's get that phase out. The second action is acknowledge the truth that 2050 is way too late. And then the third action is that we need to set interim climate targets, adopt yearly targets for accomplishing Guelph goals. And one of the, so this is policy wide and city wide. And then what we all need to be doing is we need to be finding ways within our own homes and within our own lives of actually reducing our own emissions. And there's a myriad of ways of doing that. And we at Emerge hopefully can help you get down that path. And on that, I'd like to just thank you for this opportunity. I hope I've provided you with an opportunity to see that we do have some things that we can do immediately locally. And I look forward to the conversation that we're about to have about this. So thank you.
Okay, fantastic, Evan. Thanks for that good kind of synthesis of a good number of things that are going on locally to address the climate crisis. Now, I wonder if you could get into a little bit more about Guelph's history around phasing out the usage of coal. Who were kind of the players in advancing those motions, if you're aware, to get the province to do that?
That's a good question. I wish you had asked me that in advance, Dustin. I would have gone back and looked at the history. I do have the actual motions from the time, and they were unanimous. That's not to say that it was simple. I don't have the names, unfortunately, but now that you've asked it, that's one of the things that's a takeaway I need to take from here. But what I didn't mention as well is that at least three other municipalities have already voted in favor of that natural gas phase out, including Hamilton. And in the case of Hamilton, I'd like you to know that the councillor who moved the motion in Hamilton is a former cabinet minister of Mike Harris's. He's now a city council there. And I'd also like to say that in 2003, 2004, when the motion was brought into the provincial legislation, it was actually a conservative motion that received all party support. And of course, politically, what happened after that, that, you know, we moved to eventually moved to a liberal government, and the liberal government continued to follow through with it. And there was all party unanimous support throughout. So not only on a local basis do we have precedent for something like this happening, but province wide, it's something that was very supportive right across the board.
Okay, great. And I know you've had some conversations with some local politicians about this motion in particular. I wonder if you could give us some insight on that on all levels of government, if you've had those discussions.
Certainly. I will say that initially, you know, when this coalition of organizations that sent the letter to council, we got pushback from some of them. I mean, some of them just weren't that involved at the time, you know, over 20 years ago, and said, well, this isn't a local issue. But there are others that were very supportive right off the bat. I would say just the opposite, because if the province goes ahead with, and what we didn't have in here is that the province is proposing an increase by 400% of the amount of natural gas that we're burning, as well as extending the life of the Pickering nuclear site. And both of these things are not good things for us to be considering at this time. The city of Guelph acts on our behalf and advocates on behalf of the citizens of Guelph all the time. So I would suggest that this is exactly what the city of Guelph needs to do. Councillor Phil Ault has been supportive, Councillor James Gordon and Leanne Piper are bringing the motion forward. We're still in the early stages of having that conversation. We're actually waiting to hear back what the timing will be on the motion specifically. We actually think that this should be easy. Let me put it that way. Frankly, this is the first part. The second part is going to be much more difficult, of wrestling to the ground what those interim targets need to be. We need to get really aggressive about those pieces. This one's a no-brainer. City Council, we want you to send a letter to the Premier. Well, okay, you know, I mean, it really isn't a heck of a lot of skin off of any of City Council's, but when it comes down to it, it's just send the Premier a letter and saying, this is what you want, and you're joining your colleagues in the KW area and in Halton Hills and in Hamilton that have all voted in favor of a motion for a phase out of natural gas.
Just going to bring forward a question from Morgan here, which was, what would we do with all the recently built gas-fired electricity generation stations if a motion like this were to be successful?
I understand that this is a phase out, and what I didn't have in there was some of the down in the weeds words that's associated with the motion, and that would be a phase out up until 2030. Even in 1997, when the coal phase out was being proposed, it was a multi-year phase out. And while it was supposed to, don't quote me on this date, while it was supposed to be done before 2005 originally, it sputtered a bit. The final lump of coal stopped being burned in a coal-fired generating station in Ontario in 2014. We got there. And I got to tell you something very interesting. In a conversation that I was on a Zoom call with MP Lloyd Longfield, who, I mean, I'm not telling anything out of school here, because he brought this up publicly, that he suffers from asthma. And he said it was though someone turned off a switch once the last of, you know, all the coal-fired plants had stopped. And medical experts have actually quantified that to the tune of about 1,600 lives a year have been saved in Southern Ontario as a result of the coal phase out. So this is, you know, this isn't some airy fairy thing out there. This is a reality. Burning fossil fuels is problematic, and natural gas has to be the next one. It has to be phased out. It can't happen overnight, and that's exactly gets to the question that you're suggesting. And all of the ways that we showed to augment the electricity supplies are the ways that we can get to actually enabling that thing to happen. Some are suggesting that, you know, we need to look at increasing nuclear supply. every single major country in the world, with the exception of France and Canada, every single major country in the world that has a nuclear fleet of electricity generation is phasing them out. France isn't phasing it out because it is a national, it's owned by the federal government. And guess what? The provincial and federal governments are intimately involved with the nuclear industry here. They're being phased out for several reasons. Let's even put aside the possibility of a Fukushima meltdown or a Chernobyl meltdown. The cost is abhorrent. No nuclear facility has come on in budget without massive amounts of subsidization. And in every single case, it's been at least twice the original budget that they were supposed to be. And the next thing that the federal and provincial governments are suggesting right now, if you haven't heard of these things, the acronym is SMR. And it stands for small modular reactors. Essentially, nuclear reactors that can go on the back of a very large flatbed truck. They're suggesting these things are relatively small, so they're suggesting that they want to use them in remote First Nations communities. We have boil water advisories in First Nations communities for decades. We haven't been able to figure out the science of supplying good, clean water. And we want to put a nuclear reactor into these remote communities. And somehow we see this as success. What's more, none of them are operational today. It's expected it's going to take at least 10 years for these things to be operational today. All the recommendations that we've brought forward, along with our colleagues here in Guelph, are recommendations and solutions that have been brought forward provincially through the Ontario Clean Air Alliance. There are viable solutions today that don't include nuclear for the cost factor, the huge cost factor. If nothing else, that one's a very simple one to rule out. I get passionate when I talk about the nuclear piece. There's nothing simple about it, none whatsoever.
Thanks, Evan. I'm going to ask you a follow-up question on nuclear, but before I do, I just want to reframe one thing that you said, which is we do have the science figured out to deliver safe drinking water to anybody across this country, but the operational components are what the Canadian government, which has jurisdiction over that, has been dragging their feet on. So I just want to reframe that. I'll also say, just on nuclear, I know that this is maybe a difficult one, but the IPCC report, the famous one from 2018, it was delineating a few paths to net zero globally, and all of the paths that they reported on had substantial increases in the uses of nuclear energy. So I was just wondering how you square that circle.
I think that one's really simple, because once you start teasing down beneath the surface on it, many of them were in places, I'll use the UK as an example. George Monbiot has been very supportive of nuclear in the UK. And when you look at the analysis of where their energy currently comes from, the opportunities that present themselves don't give them many other options. They have done massive amounts of wind. And it's when I looked at the data, it wasn't a surprise to me that even staunch environmentalists were supportive of expanding nuclear there. In Canada, we're absolutely blessed with huge amount of riches from a renewable energy perspective here, and there's no reason for us to go down that nuclear path again, and to continue to just do something that didn't make sense decades ago and doesn't make sense today. So I agree with you that in certain jurisdictions that probably makes sense. It doesn't in Ontario or in Canada as a whole. And generally in Canada, the highest percentage of electricity generation is hydroelectric. In Ontario, 60% of our electricity comes from nuclear. That's an awful lot to make up. But what we're talking, so it's about 60%. All these numbers won't add up to 100, but I'm going to give you some approximate numbers. About 60% is nuclear. Another 20 to 25% is hydroelectric, and under 20% is natural gas, and then another 11% is solar and wind. So I didn't get the numbers exactly right. Someone's doing the math and saying, Ferrari, your math doesn't add up. But it's in that realm between of a lot of them. So the opportunity that we have right now is to beef up the hydroelectric side of it with Quebec, beef up both the wind and the solar. And my favorite piece, and thank you, Lisa, for bringing that point up earlier about conservation and efficiency. It's the least sexy of all the things we can be doing. It's the most cost effective. It's the quickest to implement. It puts more people to work per dollar of energy that we want to expend than any of those other alternatives combined.
Okay, yeah, thanks for answering that. I want to ask you just one more question relating to the gas phase out, and then maybe we can move on to focus about climate targets a little bit more. I just wanted to kind of look at what Doug Ford's conservative government has been doing to sort of impose their will on municipal governments. It doesn't seem like they're too kind to protests from the municipal level. You know, we've seen them ban municipalities from using ranked balloting very recently. And also, you know, one of their first things that they ever did was to reduce the number of seats in Toronto. So I was just wondering if, and Evan, you can answer this, and also Councillor Ault, would you foresee any potential political ramifications for Guelph if we were to make such a motion that flies in what we assume is the interests of the Conservative government?
Well, I'm going to digress and talk about Brian Mulroney for a moment. That one of the largest environmental initiatives that ever happened was in the early 90s under the Montreal Protocol around CFCs that Brian Mulroney and, believe it or not, Ronald Reagan were quite instrumental in making it happen. And it happened because in both countries, there was a groundswell of concern over these issues. So that's the first reference to conservative governments. The next one is going to be in both cases with Mike Harris. The largest expansion of a protected area system in Canadian history was under Mike Harris in something called Ontario's Living Legacy, where 2.4 million hectares, to put that into context, Algonquin Park is 0.7 million hectares. So significantly, like almost five times the size of Algonquin Park in protected areas were added to the province of Ontario under a conservative government, one. The second thing is the coal phase out started, it didn't finish, but it also started under a conservative government. And where I'm going with that, not that conservative governments are the best thing since sliced bread, but they were responding to what the public wanted. And I'm suggesting that we need to make it very clear what we want, and that there will be political hell to be paid in the event that our politicians don't do what we want, and namely get on with fighting climate change. So frankly, I don't care. You know, we're apolitical at Emerge. We will work with any politician that wants to see this happen. And frankly, if I can put a fine point on the coal phase out, it was sputtering for some time. That whole endeavor was sputtering for some time until in the late 90s, this woman that wasn't even 5 foot tall grasped onto it, and she was going to make the provincial government pay it, and that was Hurricane Hazel. I don't know if you've ever met Hazel, but she is a force to be reckoned with. She's called Hurricane Hazel for a reason, but she was the mayor of Mississauga at the time. And what they found at the time was that children with asthma, the prominence of children with asthma in and around the Lakeview Generating Station, which was at the base of Highway 427 in Toronto, was through the roof. And she just wasn't going to accept it. And she just was relentless with the premier at the time until they actually capitulated on this whole thing. That's not to say that there wasn't a huge groundswell right around the province, but all of us can affect change regardless of what government is there and regardless of the roadblocks that they're putting in our way. We just need to not accept no for it. We can't accept no for it.
And there's another aspect of it as well, Evan, and I'm going to have to get you to weigh in on this. And that is, as much as I'm opposed to nuclear energy, there is a massive workforce in places like Kincardine and in Eastern Ontario that is very dependent upon nuclear. And that's a voting force as well. And I've come up against it. And these are, you know, I'm a unionist. And these, in many cases, these are very good union members who believe that their unions do well for them. But they are absolutely convinced that nuclear means jobs and means livelihoods and well-being. And there's a challenge for the anti-nuke industry, because I think you're right. You know, we can flip power from Ontario to Quebec very, very easily. I was down at the IESO and I saw how easily it can be done. And there's a really important factor here. Ontario consumes far more electricity in the summer than does Quebec. And Quebec consumes far more electricity in the winter than does Ontario. And there's a fairly simple trade in some senses. And Quebec has this richness of hydroelectricity. Forget the James Bay project and what it meant in terms of an environmental disaster years ago. When I think even Evan was probably fighting it, as was I. It's now a done deal. This is very much an accomplishment that can occur, but we need to convince the broad swath of the Ontario community that it is worthwhile. And this is at a time when people are very concerned about COVID and about their jobs. And when they hear somebody like Donald Trump or Doug Ford, give them the platitudes, give them buck a beer, give them nothing but hollow comments, they see that as more valuable than some of the rational approaches taken by someone like Kathleen Wynne, who they say, well, look what she did with the natural gas plants and so on and so forth. So there's a real challenge here to get beyond the emotional and get back to the rational. Remember, and Ted, you might remember this, even Ernie Eves was a red Tory. Mm-hmm. You start searching for the red Tories right now in Toronto, and they're probably hiding under their desks.
You put a lot of things out there. Let me start with one of the things you've said first up about, you know, the reluctance of city council to get involved with political politics. Guess what? City council is involved with provincial politics daily and advocating yep. on our behalf daily. And absolutely. Usually it entails having our hands out and saying, give us more money. That's interfering with provincial politics. So if anyone is going to suggest that this is not a provincial, this is not a local list, an issue, then they need to look at their calendars and see what they're doing on a daily basis to understand whether or not this makes sense.
But let me interrupt there for just one yes. second, Evan. One of the things that I forgot, the other target that should be considered is not just a letter to the provincial government, but our mayor sits on LUMCO. Yes. The large urban thank mayors should be targeted as well. Forget the Association of Municipalities of Ontario. They're rural, they're small, they're not yes. interested. But gotcha. Definitely LUMCO is something that should be targeted.
So we should maybe just remember that when we get down in the details and on the weeds on that, that the copies of it should go to LUMCO at the time. Your point about jobs and the nuclear sector is exactly the same thing that we're running into. I said the global we of environmentalists trying to phase out fossil fuel production in Alberta. Every single environmental organization that's been talking about the phase out of fossil fuels has been talking about simultaneously is about a just transition for workers in those fields. And in the case of oil and gas, it's about how do we transition them to other positions, but also how do we cap and how do we fix all of the contamination that's currently out there, gain expertise in actually getting rid of the existing wells that are out there, gain that expertise and export it elsewhere. And frankly, the same thing holds true from a nuclear perspective. It's the first piece of it. That transition needs to make sense. The second part about it is that conservation and efficiency and renewable energy every single time will create more jobs per dollar spent than the nuclear sector ever will. It's a very simple fact, and it tends to be local as opposed to at a large plant on Lake Ontario or a large plant on Lake Huron, which tend to be very localized, and that power needs to be sent a very long way. As opposed to conservation and efficiency, you can't come and work on Lisa McTaggart's house. You can't be working on that in Kincardine and expect her to see a benefit from it, because it's just not going to happen.
You can give her a small nuclear device.
Yeah, certainly. I'm sure she will. Well, she's got a U-shaped house, so she can park it in the middle of that. In the middle of that.
No.
Oh, come on, Lisa. Really? So I think the last piece that I want to say on the nuclear on the nuclear issue is this: the largest lobby at Queen's Park. So these are paid lobbyists, paid very well. The largest continuous lobby at Queen's Park for decades has been the nuclear industry. And that same industry is the second largest lobbying effort in Ottawa, second only to the oil and gas industry. And whereas in Ontario, the gas industry is probably a second or a third behind the nuclear sector. So you've got to know that all of the three major parties are generally supportive of nuclear and tend to be pushed in a big way when it comes to fossil fuels, including natural gas in Ontario. And those lobbyists are spinning it in very different ways, depending on which party they're lobbying at a specific time. I'll also mention that when it comes to unions in Ontario, the overwhelming majority of unions in Ontario have been supportive of a just recovery that sees us moving away from things like fossil fuels and nuclear, with the exception of the union called the Power Workers Union, who by and large, they essentially represent people specifically in the nuclear sector. And if anything, they just don't play nice with all of the other unions that are out there. They have a very different raison d'être, and they're not seeing the long term stuff associated with what's going on the nuclear side of things.
Okay, fantastic. So I think that's a good discussion on the motion to phase out coal fired gas plants across the province. Hopefully, people realize that it's not a very novel idea that to solve a fossil fuel driven crisis, you have to stop burning fossil fuels. But we'll see if people can wrap their head around that concept. So maybe now we can talk about the timeline a little bit more of getting Guelph to net zero and to 100% renewable energy. So first off, I guess, we know our targets are at 2050 right now, but why were they set there in the first place? You know, who was responsible for selecting 2050? It seems to be kind of a magic number for a lot of jurisdictions in the global north. You see it in Guelph's messaging, Canada's messaging, the Biden campaign's messaging. But I would argue that 2050 is actually when the whole world has to cross that finish line. And, if the most quote-unquote advanced nations in the world are procrastinating until the ultimate deadline, then that doesn't seem very hopeful. So why isn't that target set earlier in the first place?
I can't speak on behalf of the nations of the world, but what I can tell you is our whole campaign about the 100% renewable and the 2050 target that we came up with, essentially where that landed was the strategy that we took, that what could we get council to agree to in the short term, and then what do we do with that agreement to drive it better all the time, to continue to make it. So what we spent the better part of 6 months behind closed doors with all sorts of individuals and organizations floating the concept of 100% renewable, which frankly sounds kind of silly right now, but the three R's of recycling sounded silly, and absolutely like any 4-year-old knows what the three R's are. But at the time it sounded very radical. And what we were trying to get a sense of what would be palatable we knew that 2050 was stupid, but our attitude was, let's get it out there. Let's have the public discuss it. Then let's fight about how quickly can we get there. And what I'm excited about is we're now fighting about how quickly can we get there. And is it 2050 or is it earlier? And if I'm not mistaken, I think this is now, we're coming up to 2 years since that decision was made by City Council. We originally on our strategy side of things, we were looking at, this might take us 2 years to get to a point where people were gonna say, we're gonna realize the same thing that we realized when we were developing the strategy going, 2050 is stupid. It needs to be way earlier than that, or we're all screwed. We've all seen the math on it. We've all seen the science associated with it. So from our perspective, it was a strategic move. You know, if we said that we wanted it to be 100% renewable energy by 2030, I mean, like, oh my God. So what was palatable? So palatable to politicians that may not be in power in 2050, sure, I'll agree to that. That makes me sound good. Say, guess what? Now we've got the commitment. We're going to hold your feet to the fire, and we need to move on with this. We need to get a lot more aggressive with it. So that was our strategy. As I said, you'll have to ask the leaders of the world why they came up with their decisions for the 2050.
Okay, and just kind of on that, you know, I think it was last May, potentially, or maybe 2 Mays ago, I don't know, I'm losing track of time, where we had a motion come to council, I think from Councillor Gordon, to start to kind of revisit that timeline and use the year 2035 instead of 2050. And it required a supermajority of councillors to revisit the target, but that didn't pass. So I wondered if you have any thoughts on why it didn't pass.
Yeah. And the conversation that I had with Councillor Gordon at the time was, in my mind, failure is success when those kinds of motions go to council. And that might sound like Orwellian, but just getting the discussion in the public is critical. And the conversation I had with him at the time was, it may be premature in the public's mind and from a political standpoint. So we need to find the political, small p political moment that provides the opportunity for council to go down that path. And frankly, the opportunity of this natural gas phase out is an opportune one. And the pandemic is an opportune one from our perspective. Simple, tell the province that they should phase this stuff out. That's a simple, that's something that should be a no brainer. Guess what? The heavy lifting is the second part of this. The gas plant phase out provides us with the opportunity to put a focus on, oh my God, we couldn't possibly, we're having a hard time even looking at 2050. What do we need to do to double down, triple down, quadruple down in order to reach those targets much sooner? So I think the political landscape has changed. I'm hoping it has. I'm really thankful at the results of the election that happened south of the border, because frankly, if it had been much, I mean, this isn't to say that it's going to be smooth sailing, but it would have been much bumpier a road for us. And I think globally, had we had a different result down there. I'm talking specifically about climate change, but I'm sure you can interject a whole series of different issues associated with that election then.
Sure. So, yeah, I know a kind of a big hang up for at least one city councilor was that the 2035 motion and the Declare Climate Emergency, those were considered symbolic, more or less. And Councillor Ault, I wondered if you had any thoughts about symbolic motions or quote unquote symbolic motions.
I don't think that I would characterize them as being symbolic. I would characterize them as being policy from which we can adopt a number of different principles and programs that are of benefit to the community. I don't want to do things that are just symbolic. I want to do things that can lead to action. And I actually think that this motion is not symbolic. What we're talking about with regards to the phase out of gas plants is something that can then lead to us getting very, very serious about 100% renewable and allow it to move forward more quickly. I'm actually glad that you asked me that, because it gives me a chance to do an ad for renewable energy. Just yesterday, it was published in CBC, that economists have identified that renewable energy is now as cheap and as affordable as fossil fuel energy in Canada. Now, I think what's really interesting about that, as much as there's a lot of squawking in places like Alberta about fossil fuels, they have an incredible renewable energy industry out there as well. It's inevitable that we are moving toward that. We don't need symbolic dates. We need target dates for programs. And that's going to be the challenge. We had one hell of a fight over 100% renewable. And I don't think that we entirely got to where I'd like to be. But to start there, to move that needle and to move it closer and closer is imperative. So, Evan, I agree with you about the 2050. We can take an arbitrary date a long time from now when, you know, I'll still be on council in 2050, maybe the others won't, but we can move it closer as we see that those objectives can be reached more easily. And like we're reaching the renewable energy goal more easily right now. Let's start moving those dates up. And truthfully, the motion to reconsider, I think there are other ways that we could have done it, but let's move forward. You forget about symbolic victories. Let's do it because it matters and we can do something about it.
Yeah, I love that. But Dustin, if I could just interject for a moment, I noticed one of the pop-up things related to all of this was that someone was suggesting that we revisit the acknowledgement of the climate crisis, and I'd recommend against it. I know that motion of acknowledging a climate crisis is quote weaker than what any of us wanted it to be, but guess what? The public doesn't understand the nuance of it. We have something. Council has acknowledged a climate crisis. We pick it up and we push it into Councillor Phil Ault's face and all the other councillors and say, you've acknowledged that this crisis exists. Now do something about it. Don't tell me that we need to make it. I mean, we could spend a disproportionate amount of time trying to fine tune the words. We won't get anything else out of it. What we need to do is take the acknowledgement of the crisis and say, okay, you've acknowledged it. Now do something. Now you don't even have to create. You don't even have to waste a piece of 8.5 by 11 paper sending it to the premier. You can do it electronically to say phase out gas. That sounds pretty damn simple to me. Oh, and by the way, while you're at it, we need to change the targets on net zero carbon and on 100% renewable. But let's not revisit the things that it might not be perfect. Is it good enough for what we need to do? Is to pick it up and beat it over people's heads? Yep, I think it's a great tool in order to do that. And I think that we could waste a lot of time arguing about what the right words need to be on that if we're not careful.
Evan, I 100% agree with you on that. We've got it, let's use it.
Yep, agreed, yeah, great.
Okay, so yeah, thanks for your answers to that. That was definitely gonna be my next question. And just to contextualize for people who weren't following along when all that happened, council decided to, instead of declare a climate emergency, they decided to acknowledge a climate crisis. So some people were up in arms about the difference there. Moving on, just one simple question from an audience member was, how are greenhouse gas emissions measured across the city of Guelph at present? And how would that fit into those interim targets that would be set?
So generally how they are measured is based on consumption of different energy sources and also looking at the waste stream and understanding, you know, what's coming out of that. But the overwhelming majority of it is from the burning of fossil fuels. It's pretty simple math. You know, you burn a cubic meter of natural gas and the CO2 emissions are X. You burn gasoline and the CO2 emission per liter is Y. So it's quite simple math when it comes down to it to be able to do that accounting. And the city has access to good data to be able to do that. The other piece on that is that electricity also has CO2 emissions because we are still burning fossil fuels associated with it. And there actually is a number attributed, like a CO2 emission value attributed per kilowatt hour of electricity that we consume. And obviously, the more that we can take the fossil fuel section out of that, the better that it becomes.
Dustin, I got a question about the article on renewable energy. I'm trying to search it. I'm having difficulty, but it's because there are reams and reams of articles on on renewable energy being as cheap as fossil fuels right now. Karen or anybody else who's interested, I would search renewable energy, Canada, CBC, and Alberta and costs. And you should find it, but it ain't going to be easy. But there's one in Popular Mechanics, and you know, you might find something new and interesting about how to fix the house in there too.
Phil, you actually sent it to me in a text, and I have it right here. So if any of you just want to Google it, it's on CBC. But so in the CBC news site, the title is "The Era of Cheap Wind and Solar Has Arrived." U of C, that's University of Calgary researchers find. And that's only going to continue to get cheaper. Thanks, Phil, for sending that to me. I don't know if I I see that my internet is a little unstable there, but I haven't frozen on you, have I?
No, you're good.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, and that math just continues to get better. So why we're going down this path where the federal government announced $20 million for a company that wants to commercialize a small modular reactor. Oh, and wait, we'll have it ready to go maybe in 10 years. And they actually handed them $20 million to say that. I mean, it just blows my mind.
Ran out of time again, that's all. Thanks as always to our guests and to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Ault, Dustin Brown, Tanya Gavert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. If you'd like to support the work that we do on this program, please visit patreon.com and look for Breezy Bullhorn. Thank you for any support you can lend, and as always, for listening.